It's deadly serious. A dizzying sensation creeps over me like I'm watching myself in a movie. He looks at me, impassive, then his eyes shift to Matt. They stay expressionless. I need to look like I know what to do. I need to stay in control. I try to force my mind to work, to come up with a solution. "Tie him up," I say to Matt. Yuri shifts his gaze back to me. His eyes narrow slightly, but he doesn't make a move. I don't look over at Matt, but I hear him leave the room. Yuri and I stare at each other. There's that hint of a smirk on his face, one that ratchets up my unease. His goal, probably. Matt comes back moments later. I glance over, and he's carrying a straight-backed wooden chair and a roll of duct tape. Yuri shifts his gaze to Matt, looks at him in a way I can't read. I wish he'd talk. I wish he'd say something. It would be better than this silence. My hands tighten on the gun. Matt sets the chair down, and Yuri sits, without prompting, gingerly, slowly. He sets his gaze on me and puts his arms behind the chair. No resisting, no fighting back. Matt starts wrapping his wrists with duct tape, then his ankles, then his body, first around chest and chair, then lap and chair. Yuri keeps his eyes on me. There's a confidence in them, one that shouldn't be there, not when he's helpless like this, not when I have a gun trained on his heart. When Matt's done, he sets down the duct tape and turns to me, his expression blank. No fear, no anger, nothing. I lower the gun, but I keep it at my side. "Can you get the file?" I say to him, and he nods, heads up the stairs. I watch him go, and I have a strange sensation that I shouldn't have let him out of my sight. Yuri watches him go, too, then turns back to me. Another smirk flickers across his lips. "You think that's going to make this all go away?" The question makes my chest tighten. "Yeah, I think it will." He gives his head a shake. Doubt creeps over me. But if the evidence is gone, then at least I won't be in jail. He won't be able to blackmail me. The rest I can figure out later. I hear Matt's steps on the stairs and glance up. My fingers tighten around the gun at my side, my muscles tense, ready to move. All I can picture is him coming down these stairs moments earlier, apparently at ease. He comes into view, fully dressed now, and my eyes go straight to his hands. There's nothing in them but a slim stack of papers. My legs feel suddenly weak. What am I thinking? This is Matt. I loosen my grip on the gun, watch as he comes closer, wordlessly extends the papers. I take them from him with my free hand, look down at the first page, a screenshot that I recognize. It's the exact same set of printouts Yuri left in our mailbox. But this isn't right. This isn't all they'd hold on to. "Where's the rest?" I say, looking up. "The rest?" "The digital copy." Matt gives me a blank look. "That's all I found." There's a sinking feeling in my chest. I fold the papers in half, stick them into the waistband of my pants against my back. Then I turn to Yuri. "I know you have another copy. Where is it?" I try to keep my voice hard, but I can hear the panic creeping into it. He's still staring at me with that hint of a smirk. "Of course there's another copy. I'll find it. I don't care how I have to threaten him, what I have to do to him." I take a step closer, and he tilts his head to watch me. "But it's not here. I don't have it." I go cold. "Oh, Vivian, you thought you outsmarted me." It's a full-blown smirk now, patronizing. "Someone got us these search results, remember? Someone with access to Athena, to all your sensitive information. Someone on the inside." Nausea ripples through me. "My friend has a copy. And if anything happens to me, those papers go straight to the FBI. The room feels like it's spinning. "Who?" I say, and my voice sounds foreign, like it belongs to someone else. Who has the copy? Yuri smiles, a content smile, one that breathes fury inside me. Destroying that evidence was my last hope. I had actually started to believe that it might work. It could be a bluff, Matt says, and I don't turn around. It's not. I can tell by the look on Yuri's face that it's not. Who? I say again, and I take a step closer, raise my gun. Yuri's face shows no fear. I feel a touch, one that sets all of my nerves on fire. I swing the gun around, and it's Matt, behind me, his hands on my forearm. He lets go, raises both palms in the air. It's just me, Viv, he says calmly. I keep the gun trained on him. He looks down at it, then back at my face. It's okay, Viv. I just want you to think. Don't be impulsive. My brain feels broken, like it can't process what's happening. Don't be impulsive. He threatened Luke, I say. I turn to Yuri, aim the gun back in his direction. I'll kill him. Yuri's expression doesn't change. What good would it do? Matt asks. I stare at him. He doesn't want me to shoot Yuri because he's on Yuri's side? You won't learn anything if you do that. Why is he so calm? But I try to process the thought. It's true, what he says. If I shoot Yuri, I'll never know who has that other copy. Maybe there's still a sliver of hope, a chance that I can find that evidence. Matt gives me a sympathetic look, then puts a hand on my arm, pushing the gun down gently. Viv, we have him, he says quietly. He can't hurt the kids. I search Matt's face, and I know he's right. Yuri's here, restrained. The threat to my kids is off the street, finally. If I call the authorities right now, he'll be in prison for life. He's a Russian spy, one who directed a cell of deep cover agents. He won't have the chance to get anywhere near my kids. The gun feels suddenly heavy in my hand. So what do we do now? Do we call the police even though Matt and I would both spend the rest of our lives behind bars? Uncertainty flickers across his features. Maybe if you just do what they asked, insert that flash drive, he suggests, a glimmer of hope on his face, and I feel like the floor has dropped from under me. This again? Is he really still stuck on this? Why is it so important to him? It won't protect them. Yuri said, they'll ask for something else, they'll threaten the kids again. You don't know that. And anyway, this would buy us time. My throat feels incredibly tight. All these conversations we've had about inserting the flash drive. He's desperate, almost. Why does he care so much? Why does he want so badly for it to happen unless he's really part of them? And then what? I say, Matt, this is a man who targeted our kids. He told you he'd kill Luke. You really want to just let someone like that go? He shifts his weight from one foot to the other, looks uncomfortable. And I can't take my eyes off him. In my mind, I see him walking down those stairs, relaxed, about to chat with Yuri. I see him promising me he didn't tell the Russians anything about Marta and Trey, lying to me. And I believed his lie. I believed it was the truth. I feel like for the first time I'm seeing who he really is. Something changes in his face, and I have that unsettling feeling again that he knows exactly what I'm thinking. You really don't trust me, he says. I voice the thought at the forefront of my mind. Okay, maybe you couldn't leave, but shouldn't you have done something? He twists his wedding band around his finger. I tried to call you once. Your phone was off. He's struggling to get the words out. Yuri found out what I did. He came back with Luke's backpack, said if I tried anything else, next time. Luke's backpack? That's why it was missing. They were that close to my son, at his school, in his classroom, reaching into his cubby, the place he stores his lunch. And their message couldn't be more clear. They can get to him, whenever and wherever they want. I look over at Yuri, who's watching us with a smile. I feel like I'm going to be sick. Of course Matt didn't do anything after that. How could he? Luke's life was in danger. I force my mind to focus. It's not just the fact that he's here, it's everything. The lie about Marta and Trey, suggesting again that I insert the flash drive. Nothing I say is going to make a difference, is it? He asks. I don't know. I hold his gaze, hold my ground. I think you want very much for me to do what he asked, and I'm trying to understand why. Why? He gives me a look of total disbelief, because I know these people. I know there's no way out. He reaches out for me, then drops his hand. And because I don't want anything to happen to our kids. We stand, staring at each other. He's the first one to break the silence. If I was on their side, Viv, if I wanted it so badly, why didn't I do it to begin with? What? I say, but it's more to stall than anything because there's a perfect clarity to his question. I gave you a flash drive. You inserted it. Why go through all this if that's what I wanted? Why wouldn't I have just given it to you to begin with? I can't answer him. He's right. That doesn't make sense. Or why didn't I lie to you? Tell you the second flash drive was nothing, just another server reset. If he had, I would have done it. I would have inserted the drive. I'm on your side, Viv, he says softly. I just don't know if you're on mine. My mind feels like a jumbled mess. I don't know what to think, what to do right now. And then my phone starts to vibrate deep in my pocket. I fumble for it and see the number. Luke's school. He should be there by now, right? He must not have arrived. Oh, God, what happened? I should have called my parents, checked in, made sure they got him on the bus, maybe even driven him there, kept him safe. I hit the green button. Hello, I say. Hi, Mom. It's Luke. I exhale a breath I didn't know I was holding, feel my world spin. And then a new torrent of panic crashes over me. Why is he calling from school? Luke, honey, what's wrong? You said to call if I saw him again. Who? I say, an automatic response, but even as the word comes out of my mouth, I know. The man. The man who talked to me at school. No, this is not possible. When did you see him, Luke? Just now. He's outside, by the fence. This can't be. I glance at Yuri, who's listening to all of this, a smile still on his face. Luke, are you sure it's him? Yeah. He talked to me again. I can barely force out the next words. What did he say? He lowers his voice and I hear the tremor in it. He said to tell you time is running out. What does that mean, Mom? Full-blown panic takes hold. I look at Matt and I know he heard the conversation. There's a flash of anger on his face that looks almost animal, and in that instant, he's my husband again, the man who'd do anything to protect us, to keep our family safe. Go, I say to him, covering the mouthpiece with my hand. He glances at Yuri, then back at me, looks uncertain. I'll be fine. Go take care of Luke. He'd never let anyone hurt the kids, of that I'm sure. We exchange a look. Then he grabs the phone from me. Luke, you stay where you are, he says. Don't move, buddy. I'll be right there. Dad's coming to get you. Chapter 20. The door closes behind Matt. Then there's silence. I'm trembling, fear and anger and desperation churning inside me. This won't end with Yuri in prison. Whoever's at Luke's school right now just made that clear. Someone else already knows. Someone else is a threat. Calling the authorities won't protect my kids. Will anything? Yuri's watching me with an amused expression. I bend down to his level, look him in the eye. Who is threatening my son? I say in a way that sounds frightening, even to me. How could I have been so wrong? If there's one thing I've had drilled into me in my job, it's never to make assumptions. And yet, didn't I do exactly that? Heard there was a man, someone with an accent, and assumed it was Yuri. An accent. That's what Luke said, right? Wasn't that why I thought it was Yuri? I struggle to think back to the conversation, remember Luke's exact words.
He had a weird voice.
God, I don't even know for sure it was a Russian accent. Is it the person that Yuri said was on the inside? No one I know of with access to Athena has an accent. Could it be someone higher up in management, someone in IT? Or could it be another Russian agent? Who is threatening my son? I say again. He says nothing, just mocks me with his eyes. And then instinct takes over. I bring the grip of the gun down hard against his forehead, as big a shock to him as to me. I've never hit anyone in my life. I will kill you, I say, and I mean it. If it would protect my kids, I'd kill him in a heartbeat. He sneers at me, squinting, a welt already forming on his forehead. The force of the blow, the way his neck snapped back with it, has left the opening of his shirt askew around his neck. The pendant on the gold chain has slipped out from under his shirt, catches the light. It's some sort of gaudy cross.
Why not? He says. You don't have anything to lose.
Rage simmers inside me. Who? I jam the gun into his temple. Whoever it is, he'll probably be gone by the time Matt arrives. How on earth will we find him?
Could be any number of people. I have so many friends I can call on.
Yuri smirks. He's toying with me. I turn away from him so he can't see my face, can't see the desperation, the terror that I'm feeling. So many friends. There's a thought swirling around in my mind, slowly forming into something distinct. Whoever Yuri has on the inside knows Matt's identity. And shouldn't they be hiding his identity from everyone if the cell's really so compartmented? And what about all the agents at my wedding, all gathered in one place at one time? Maybe it's not as compartmented as we think. Maybe our understanding of the program is flawed. Maybe Dimitri the Dangle. His name suddenly fills my mind, crowds out all else. Dimitri the Dangle, the walk-in who claimed there were dozens of sleeper cells in the U.S. The man we thought was a double agent, someone the Russians sent to us bearing false information. But he was right, wasn't he? If there were that many agents at my wedding, he was right. He was telling the truth. I rack my brain, trying to remember what else he said, what other claims didn't fit with what we knew. So we ignored them, chalked them up to being false leads. He said the sleepers' names were stored on the handlers themselves, on their bodies, at all times. I look at Yuri. My mind is churning, fitting together the pieces of a puzzle I didn't even know existed. Names stored on handlers' bodies at all times. And what we've always believed to be true, based on all our other intelligence, names stored electronically. Something clicks in my mind. Could it be? I pull my eyes away, up to his face, and my breath catches. It is. I see it in his face, the realization that I know. There is a helplessness there. The same kind I've been feeling for weeks now. He's bound to the chair, can't hide it, can't protect it. The smirk's gone now. I take a step toward him, then another, until I'm standing over him, and he has no choice but to stare up at me, exposed and vulnerable. I can see the fear grow in his eyes. I take hold of the pendant, look at it, the contours of the golden cross, the size of it. Turn it over. See four tiny screws. I clasp my fist around it. I look him in the eyes. I pull down with one swift, forceful yank. His neck jerks forward, then back again as the chain snaps, cascades down around my hand. "This is it, isn't it?" I say. And before I can say another word, I hear a click behind me. A gun being cocked. Chapter 21. I go completely still. Someone entered, and I didn't hear. We didn't lock the door behind Matt, did we? Yuri's craning his neck around me to face the door. His eyes are glued on something, someone, whoever just entered. There's recognition on his face, a slow smile creeping to his lips, and it sends panic shooting through me. I'm going to die. I'm going to die here, right now. I'm frozen in place, waiting for the shot. I can't bring myself to turn around to see the person who's going to kill me. Yuri's smile is even bigger now. I see his teeth, crooked on one side, yellowed. He opens his mouth to speak. "Hello, Peter. It's good to see you." Peter. I hear the name, but it doesn't seem real. It can't be, can it? I turn around slowly, pleated pants, loafers, glasses, and a revolver pointed right at me. "Peter." Instinctively, I drop my pistol, raise my hands, back away from him. "Omar said there was a mole in CIC, someone who worked with me. Yuri said they had someone with access to Athena. I should have connected the dots." "But Peter? Peter?"
"Vivian, I think you know Peter," Yuri says, and starts laughing, a crazy manic laugh. He's enjoying this. My eyes are still on Peter. He lowers the gun to his side, his arm at an awkward angle, like he doesn't quite know what to do with it.
"Those search results you took, Vivian," Yuri says. "I told you they didn't matter, because our friend Peter here has another copy, don't you, Peter?"
"How could you?" I whisper, ignoring Yuri, my focus entirely on Peter. He blinks at me, says nothing.
"I have to say your timing is wonderful," Yuri goes on. "I was just talking about you."
Peter's eyes don't leave mine. I'm not sure he heard what Yuri said.
"When you didn't show up this morning, Vivian, I had a feeling you might be here," Peter says.
"Peter's the mole. He's been working for the Russians, helping them blackmail me." "How could you?" I say again. He pushes his glasses up with the index finger of his free hand, opens his mouth to speak, shuts it again, clears his throat.
"Catherine."
"Catherine. Of course, Catherine." Catherine's the only thing that mattered to Peter more than his job. His country. He pulls his glasses off, uses the back of his other hand, the one with the gun, to swipe his eyes. The gun flails, the barrel pointing in all directions. I'm not sure he even remembers he's holding it, and his fingers still on the trigger.
"That clinical trial," he says, putting his glasses back on, adjusting them on the bridge of his nose. "She didn't get in."
"Didn't get in." I stare at him, need him to continue. In the chair behind me, Yuri is silent.
"She had a couple of months to live, at most. There's no way to describe what that's like. Hearing that news..."
His voice wobbles, he shakes his head, clears his throat.
"One day she was fine, we had the rest of our lives to look forward to. And the next day, that news... 2 more months." I feel a pang of sympathy for him, one that very quickly dissipates. This isn't Peter, my mentor, my friend. This is someone standing in front of me with a gun, ready to kill me. He blinks, refocuses on me. Then someone showed up at my door. One of them. He nods at Yuri. His voice stays flat. Promised to get us the drugs from the trial if I'd work for them.
So you did it, I say. He shrugs, a hopeless shrug. There's shame in his gesture. At least there's that.
I knew it was wrong. Of course I did. But he was offering the most valuable thing in the world to me, time. Time with the one person who meant everything to me. How can you put a price on that? How can you say no to that?
He's pleading, like he needs me to understand, to forgive him. And in a way, I do. As much as I hate to admit it, I do.
They hit him where he was most vulnerable. They did the same to me, didn't they? I never told Catherine. She wouldn't have let me do it. I told her that they let her into the trial after all. I vowed that when it was all over, I'd come clean. I'd tell security exactly what I'd told the Russians. I'd right every wrong I'd committed.
A rush of something surges through me. Hope?
It's over now, isn't it? Catherine's gone. The drugs worked. For a while.
Yuri's listening with rapt attention, like he's hearing all this for the first time, too.
Then he gave me the flash drive, told me to load it onto the computer in the restricted access room.
Peter pushes the glasses up on his nose.
I refused, telling them about Marta's drinking or Trey's boyfriend, that's one thing. But giving them access to our systems, to the identities of covert agents, Russians who are working for us, there's no way I could do that.
Peter's jaw clenches tight.
He threatened to cut off her drugs. And then he did it. She died 4 weeks later.
My mouth opens and a rush of air escapes. My heart goes out to him once more, imagining the agony of those weeks, knowing what his decision cost them both. And then a newfound surge of hatred for these people, these monsters.
They think I won't say anything, Peter goes on. They think there's no way I'd go to the authorities now because I'd guarantee myself a place in prison for the rest of my life. What they don't realize is that my life isn't really worth living anymore.
Yuri looks like he's been hit, stunned, speechless. Peter ignores him. There are tears in his eyes.
I didn't want to go on. But I had to. I had to fix what I'd done.
His voice quivers.
Especially what I'd done to you.
To me? I breathe.
I told them we were almost into Yuri's laptop. My guess is that's when they loaded Matt's picture on. For you to find.
It makes sense. That would explain why the files weren't encrypted. Why it was photographs, nothing more. It was a setup. They knew exactly how I'd act, that I wouldn't turn Matt in, that they'd be able to manipulate me. They knew it even when I didn't.
I'm responsible for getting you into this, Peter says quietly.
I should say something, but I don't know what, can't find the words. This is too much to process right now. And then I see Peter's eyes focus on something behind me. A mask of fear settles over his face.
Drop the gun, I hear. Matt's voice.
I turn, and there he is, standing at the edge of the living room. Beyond him, I can see that the door leading from the kitchen to the patio is ajar. He snuck in through the back. A pistol is in his hand, by his side. His gaze is locked on Peter. There's a dull pounding in my head like none of this can really be happening. None of it makes sense. He shouldn't be here. He should be at school, picking up our son, keeping him safe. "Where's Luke?" I ask. "Why are you back already?" He doesn't look at me. I'm not sure he even heard me. "Matt, where's Luke?" "I called your parents. They're getting him." How did he know my parents were at the house, and why didn't he go himself? None of this is right. "Why?" I managed to ask. "They're closer. They'd get there faster." He holds my gaze, his expression soothing. "They were glad to help. And I couldn't leave you here alone. Go on, Peter. Continue." But Peter is silent. His hands are clasped in front of him, the revolver on the floor at his feet. I look over at Yuri, who's taking it all in. The fear I'd seen just moments ago is gone, replaced with the smug look that terrifies me, even though I'm too confused to understand exactly why. Matt speaks again. "Continue." His voice is brittle. "Yuri's right, Vivian. I downloaded the search results before the systems reset. I'm the reason they're blackmailing you." Peter's expression hardens. "But he's wrong about something. I didn't keep a copy." He reaches into his front pocket, and Matt raises his gun. "Matt, stop!" I say. I can hear the panic in my voice. "It's okay," Peter says. He's already pulled something out of his pocket, something small. "It's just this." He holds out a flash drive, dangling from a silver key ring. I stare at it, watch it sway back and forth, suspended in the air, and wait for him to explain. There has to be an explanation. I trust him. He's been my mentor for years.
"It's the pictures you found. Minus Matt's. That's all I kept."
He extends the flash drive out to me.
"There's no evidence you've ever seen them. Nothing they can use to blackmail you."
Peter takes a step closer to me, the drive still suspended from one hand.
"Do what you want with this, and with the identity of the fifth sleeper."
He casts a quick glance at Matt.
"I trust you'll make the right decision, Vivian, whatever that is. But they're not going to manipulate you the way they did me."
I pull my eyes from him to the drive. Then I reach for it, take it from him. Matt's watching me, his expression unreadable. Peter's words keep ringing in my head.
"I trust you'll make the right decision, Vivian, whatever that is."
I look down at the gun in Matt's hand. My mind flashes back to the shoebox in our closet, to finding the empty space where it had once been hidden. And then realization hits. "You had a gun this whole time." The words come out before I can process them, filter them.
"What?
Why didn't you shoot Yuri? Why did you stay? Jesus. Viv, are you serious? You said you weren't sure if you could take him, but you had a gun." "I'm not a killer." He looks incredulous. "And what good would it have done?" "He threatened our son. He brought you Luke's backpack." I watch the emotion on his face morph into hurt.
"My God, Vivian, what's it going to take for you to trust me?"
I can't answer that. We stare at each other, unblinking, and I see his jaw tighten, his nostrils flare just the smallest bit. A sound pulls my attention away. Yuri is chuckling.
"This is better than the movies," he says with a laugh.
He believes Matt's on his side. The revelation hits me like a slap, leaves me feeling like the wind's been knocked out of me. And then Yuri's smile vanishes, just like that. His face becomes like stone.
"The boy dies tomorrow," he says, his eyes burning into mine.
The words draw all the air out of the room. They're so unexpected, so terrible.
"If you don't do this, Luke dies tomorrow."
There's no doubt in my mind that he means it. Suddenly, it's just me and him,
this man who intends to kill my child. I'm paralyzed, can't tear my eyes away from his face.
And then another one after that, Ella, maybe.
There's a look in his eyes now that makes my stomach turn.
Although she's growing into quite a pretty girl, I might save her for last. Start with the twins, let her get a little older first.
My vision's blurring, all the strength in my body gone. I manage to turn toward Matt, the only person who could possibly understand the depth of my terror right now. I open my mouth to speak, but all that comes out is a strangled, anguished plea. Something changes in his face. A look of resolve settles over it, and inexplicably, I know what's coming. I watch Matt lift his gun. And then, there's a shot. My ears ring. Everything is muffled, fuzzy. The blast reverberates in my head. I blink, try to focus.
This isn't real. This can't be real. Matt drops the gun. His hands fly up in front of him like he doesn't know what to do with them. There's a look on his face I've never seen before. Revulsion and disbelief. Like he had no idea he was capable of what he just did. He takes a gasping breath. Then another.
Yuri's slumped in his chair, head lowered. Blood darkens the center of his shirt, creeping, staining it at the edges even as I watch. Reality hits me a moment later. Matt just killed someone. My husband just took someone's life. A monster's life, but a life just the same.
"You need to leave,"
I hear. Peter's voice. I can barely hear him through the ringing in my ears, the hammering of my heart.
"The Bureau's been on my tail. They'll be in here any minute."
The FBI. Here. Oh, my God.
"You need to leave," Peter says again, this time with more urgency. He reaches down, picks up Matt's gun.
I need to leave, but I can't move. And then there's a sound behind me, pounding, a loud blow, then another, and then the door bursts open. Figures in dark tactical gear enter, crouched low, rifles raised and aimed. They're shouting, "FBI, hands in the air!" I raise my arms high above me. I see the vests, the large block letters, the barrels of the rifles pointing at Peter, at me. Just Peter and me. Matt's gone.
"Drop your weapon!"
I look at the agents and there's a face I recognize. Omar. He's aiming at Peter, yelling. They're all yelling, "Drop the gun! Drop the gun!" Matt's gun is still in Peter's hand at his side. That awkward tilt of the arm, I can't read his face. There's more yelling, more instructions to put the gun down, put hands in the air. Then I hear Peter's voice over them. "Let me talk! Let me talk!" The yelling quiets. The agents go still, each in a shooting stance, arms extended straight in front, guns aimed, two at Peter, one at me. Peter sees it too.
"She's done nothing wrong," he says.
He's calm, astonishingly calm.
"She's here because of me. I needed her to hear me explain."
The gun stays trained on me.
"It's okay. She's one of us," Omar says.
After the slightest hesitation, the barrel swings away from me.
"Peter, drop your weapon," he orders. "I need to talk." Peter shakes his head. "I need you to listen."
The glasses have slid down his nose again, but this time he doesn't slide them back up, just tilts his head down, looks over them.
"I did this," he continues, gesturing to the chair with his empty hand. "I killed this man, Yuri Yakov. He's a Russian agent."
His eyes are full of desperation.
"I worked for him. I'm the mole."
Omar looks stunned. My eyes dart back to the gun in Peter's hand.
"I told the Russians about my co-workers. I'm the reason Marta and Trey were pitched, maybe others too. I told them we were investigating Yuri, that we were about to gain access to his computer."
His forehead is damp, lights reflecting off the sweat, glistening there. And then I inserted a USB drive into the computer in the restricted access room. I erased the search history from agency servers.
I suck in a breath. I think back to that day, to bumping into him at the door. He knew. And now he's confessing to it, protecting me.
And then the truth hits me. There's a reason he's confessing to everything right now, right here. There's a reason he hasn't dropped the gun. No! I scream. I'm sorry, he whispers, his eyes still on me. Then he raises the gun. I see it happen, hear it happen. Yelling, a hail of bullets, Peter sagging to the floor in front of me, blood flowering out around him. Screaming. A dull sound at first, louder as my hearing returns, until I realize that it's coming from me.
Chapter 22. I sit on the couch in Yuri's living room, perched on the edge, my hands gripping the cushions on either side of me, overstuffed drab brown fabric. There's a wail of police sirens outside, several of them out of sync. A grating symphony. Flashing lights, too. They cast a pattern on the wall. A little show of dancing blue and crimson splotches. I watch it, because otherwise I'd look at the sheet that covers Peter's body. And I can't do that. Omar's beside me, close, but not too close. I can feel his eyes on me, his and those of the other agents in the apartment. The host of others that have now swarmed in. They're tagging, photographing, milling about and talking, stealing glances my way. I think that Omar's waiting for me to speak first, and I'm doing the same. Waiting to hear him Mirandize me. I'm intensely aware of the folded printouts in my waistband, the evidence that would get me locked away for the rest of my life.
"Can I get you anything?" he finally says.
"Water."
I shake my head. My eyes are still on the lights on the wall. I'm trying to sort through everything that's happened, trying to make sense of it all. I have the hard copy of the evidence, and Peter destroyed the backup. Yuri's dead. He can't accuse me of anything. And Peter confessed to my worst mistake, inserting the flash drive.
"We're going to have to talk about this, you know," Omar says, his voice gentle.
I nod, my mind working. Is he asking me as a friend and colleague, or as a suspect? I could pretend I just found out that Matt's a sleeper, that Yuri told me. Let the Bureau look into it. It's a chance to make things right. To turn Matt in like I should have the very first day this began. He'd understand it's what he told me to do to begin with.
Luke dies tomorrow. But if I don't insert the flash drive, they'll go after Luke. I have no idea who's threatening him, and I can't tell the FBI about it without telling them everything, implicating myself. I can't get thrown in jail when Luke's in danger like this. I don't trust the Bureau to find the guy who's threatening him, not in time.
"Could you start by telling me why you're here?" Omar presses.
I look away. And without thinking, my eyes land on the sheet covering Peter. Omar follows my gaze, then nods like I've just answered his question.
"That call the other day, was it from him?"
My eyes stay on the sheet. I'm not sure how to answer. I need a story that fits with everything that happened. I need time to figure that out, and I'm out of time.
"Or Yuri?"
I blink. What would make the most sense? What did I tell him about the call? I struggle to remember. Someone's wrapped up in it. Someone who's important to me.
"Vivian," Omar says, his voice so gentle it's almost tender. "I never should have given you that info. Not without knowing what was going on."
"It's okay," I stammer. "What does he know? What did I tell him that day?"
"I should have trusted my gut, figured out why you needed it. He shakes his head. You did me a favor. He looks away, back over to the sheet. A raw sadness twists his face. Peter was his friend, too, wasn't he? You were trying to help him, he says. It's a statement, not a question. I swallow. Now, I need to say something. He was my mentor, my friend. I know, but he was a traitor. I nod, on the verge of tears, emotion threatening to crest over. We had him under surveillance, suspected he was the mole. We watched him come in here, and then when we heard the shot, what did he say before we arrived? Did he explain why he did it? Catherine, I say. They used Catherine. It's all I can choke out. There will be plenty of time to explain more later. That part I want to explain, need to explain. Peter wasn't a bad guy. They took advantage of him, coerced him, used the thing that was most important to him in all the world. They get you where you're most vulnerable, he murmurs. I listen to the wail of the sirens outside. He planned from the beginning to make things right. That's what he was trying to do. I shudder. He did make things right, didn't he? At least for me, admitted to my biggest sin, setting back the servers, kept Matt's identity hidden, even came up with the four pictures I erased, the ones I felt so guilty about hiding. The four pictures. The flash drive. I pat the outside of my pocket, feel it in there. I reach in and pull it out, extend it toward Omar. He gave me this, said the pictures of Yuri's sleepers are on here. Omar's gaze locks onto it. He hesitates, then takes it from me, swings around, calls for a colleague. Within minutes, there's a laptop on the table in front of us, and Omar's inserting the drive. I watch as pictures appear on the screen. The woman with the orange curls, the man with the round glasses, the two others, the four I erased, they're all here. And Matt's not. Four? I hear the other agents say. Only four? Strange, Omar murmurs. Should be five, right? He looks at me. I blink at the screen and nod absently. I'm vaguely aware that the agents are having a conversation, something about the significance of four versus five, theories for why there might only be four. A sleeper died, retired. The program isn't quite as robust as we believe. I can feel Omar watching me, a long look, intense, one that sets my nerves on high alert. There's more conversation, more discussion, and eventually an agent comes over, scoops up the laptop, disappears with it. The other agents drift away. I'm going to let you go home, Omar says. He lowers his voice. And tomorrow, Vivian, you're going to tell me everything. Everything. Is that clear? Tomorrow. Luke dies tomorrow. I nod because I can't make my voice work right now. He leans in closer, his eyes searching mine. I know there's more to this than you're letting on. I'm still badly shaken by the time I get home. The gunshots won't stop echoing in my mind. I'm still picturing Peter's face as he apologized, as he lifted his gun, as he fell. But most of all, I'm hearing Yuri's words, the threat to my son. Matt's in the front hall when I walk in, and it's jarring to see him here, in our house. It feels wrong, almost like he doesn't belong. I stop and we stare at each other, neither of us speaking, neither of us making any move toward the other. Why didn't you leave when Peter said to? He finally asks. I couldn't. In my mind, I picture the agents storming in, then turning around and seeing he wasn't there. My eyes search his. Why did you leave without me? I thought you were right behind me when I got outside and realized you were still in there. I was terrified. The words ring true, but the emotion doesn't quite reach his eyes. what happened in there. I shake my head. Too much to tell you right here, right now. Are you okay? His voice is flat, like he doesn't much care one way or the other. And it dawns on me. He blames me. He blames me for the fact that he killed someone, and he's furious with me. Yeah. His expression doesn't change, and I'm about to say something else when I hear Ella. Mommy's home! She yells. She bounds into the hall, runs over, hugs my legs. I lay a hand on her head, then crouch down to her level, give her a kiss. I look up and see Luke hanging back. I let go of Ella, walk over, and give him a hug, relief coursing through me. Thank God he's okay. And then Yuri's words run through my head unbidden. I squeeze him even tighter. I walk into the family room, my dad's on the couch and my mom's on the floor, struggling to her feet. There's an elaborate Lego town spread out in front of her. Oh, honey, you're home, she says. There's concern on her face. I can't believe you worked all night. Do they make you do that often? That's not healthy, working all night like that. Not often, I say. And with Luke sick and everything? She goes on, shaking her head. I glance at Luke, whose head is bowed, then at Matt in the kitchen, who shrugs slightly, avoiding my eyes. I guess they'd have to lie, though, wouldn't they? They had to give my parents some reason why he came home from school early. There's an awkward pause as we all just stand around, looking at one another. Well, my mom finally says, now that Matt's back, we can get out of your hair. She gives Matt a smile. My dad's looking at him from the couch, no smile, naturally. He's never been one to let things go easily if he thinks someone's hurt me. I glance at Matt, but he's still not looking at me. They can't leave. Not yet. Actually, I say, if you guys could stay a little longer. My mom's smile fades. Dad's expression hardens. Both of them look at Matt like he's about to take off. If you can't, I understand. I know you've got work, and of course we can stay, my mom says. Anything you need, honey. Her eyes dart again to Matt. It's okay. I can make this right later. I can make all of this right. You know, your father and I could use some fresh clothes. Why don't we head back to Charlottesville tonight? Come back in the morning. You can do laundry here, I say. She ignores me. And the house. We should check on the house. She wants to give us privacy, doesn't she? If that's what you want to do, I say. I don't have the strength to argue. And besides, it'll be easier for Matt and me to talk if they're gone. They leave a short time later, and then it's back to just the six of us. I lock the door behind them, then check the locks on the other doors and the windows, too. As I'm drawing the blinds, I hear Matt in the kitchen. What should we have for dinner tonight, Princess? His tone is light, but I can hear a hollowness in it. Mac and cheese? Comes Ella's voice. For dinner? Matt says. There's a beat of silence, and I look over into the kitchen. She's bobbing her head up and down, a grin on her face. Matt turns to Luke. Buddy, what do you think? Luke looks up at me like he's waiting for me to say no. When I stay quiet, he turns back to Matt and shrugs, a smile pulling at the corners of his lips. Sure. Mac and cheese it is, Matt says, reaching down into the cabinet for a pan. There's an edge to his voice, one I hope the kids don't notice. Why not? With peas, Ella says brightly, like she's bargaining. That's usually the compromise when we have mac and cheese for lunch, a side of peas. We don't need the peas, Luke chides, his voice hushed. He already said yes. Ella's little brow furrows. Oh. Caleb starts fussing, so I put him in his high chair, set a couple of crackers on his tray. Chase sees them and starts whining, throws his arms out toward me, his chubby fingers spread wide. I pick him up and set him down in his own chair with his own crackers. Luke and Ella drift off into the family room, and I watch Matt at the stove. His back's to me, and he's quiet and stiff. Because I'm not a killer. I picture him saying. He turned into one, though. And he blames me for it. Do you want to say anything? I ask. I see him go still, but he doesn't turn around, doesn't say a word. I feel even more desperate, even more hopeless, seeing him like this. How can I deal with this threat to Luke when Matt won't even look at me, won't speak to me? How can I be so close to losing everything all at once? I didn't ask you to do it, I say quietly. He spins around, a wooden spoon in his hand. You made it clear what you expected. What I expected? This isn't fair. He can't be putting this all on me. He heard what Yuri said about Ella. He lowers his voice even more. You wouldn't trust me unless I did it. Why should I trust you? I practically explode. It's loud enough that the kids can hear. Luke and Ella go quiet in the family room, their play paused.
Mommy, Ella says tentatively. Daddy, can you stop fighting, please?
Matt and I exchange a long look. Then he shakes his head, turns back to the stove. We don't say another word. Chapter 23. We get the kids fed and bathed and into bed, and then we fall back into our normal routine. Matt cleans up the kitchen, I pick up the toys in the family room, except none of this is normal, because we've just been through hell, and there's a threat to the kids, and Matt won't even look at me. I watch him, see the top of his head, the little spot on the top where the hair's starting to thin, just the smallest bit. He's scrubbing something in the sink. I sit back on my heels. We need to talk. He doesn't turn, keeps scrubbing. Matt. What? His head jerks up and he gives me a look, one that's sharp and pained at the same time. Then he looks back down. We need to talk about Luke, I insist, and I hear the desperation in my voice. I need to talk to him. I need a partner in this. His hands go still, but he doesn't look up. I can see the rise and fall of his shoulders with each breath. I focus on that spot where his hair's thinning, so different now than it was a decade ago when we first met. So much is different now. Fine. He turns the water off, the rush stops, and there's only a slow drip, the last droplets finding their way into the sink. I exhale, grateful for this opening, then force my mind to focus. Did Luke say anything else about the man who talked to him at school? He swings the dish towel over his shoulder, walks into the family room. He perches on the armrest of the couch, his body tense. I pressed him on it, had him tell me everything he could possibly remember. It was a Russian accent for sure. I pulled up some audio clips on my phone, different accents. There was no question in his mind. There's a coldness to the way he's speaking. I try to ignore it, try to focus. Okay. Russian accent. Another Russian agent. There's a thought pricking at the edges of my mind. The ringleader. Could it be? Could Yuri have reached out to his handler, asked for help? And appearance. He said dark brown hair, brown eyes, average height and weight. It makes sense, though. Almost more sense than anything else. Yuri's not supposed to have contact with any other Russian agents. No one except the ringleader. Wearing jeans last time, black pants this time. Button-down shirts both times. A necklace. A necklace. He continues to talk, but the words are a blur. My mind's churning again. A necklace? He pauses mid-sentence, whatever the sentence was. Yeah. A gold chain. Without thinking, my hand lands on the front pocket of my pants, feels the hardness of the pendant inside, and then, just as quickly, I pull it back to my lap, clasp it with the other. My eyes find Matt's. Do I look as guilty as I feel? And I see confusion in them. Hurt. Like he knows I'm not telling him something, that I don't trust him enough to do so. He stands and turns away from me. Wait, I say. He stops,
and for several long moments I don't know what he's going to do. Then he turns back around. I lied to you, Viv, and I am truly sorry, from the bottom of my heart. His chin quivers just the smallest bit. But I have let you hate me for weeks. I can't do it forever. What's that supposed to mean? It feels like a goodbye, and how can it be when we need to get rid of this danger, protect Luke from this threat? I thought we were strong enough to get through this, but I'm not sure anymore. He shakes his head. I'm not sure you'll ever trust me. Confusion swirls inside me. Should I trust him? He lied to me for years. But I understand why he did it. He was trapped. And ever since I discovered the truth, he's been nothing but honest. I picture him walking down the stairs in Yuri's apartment, fresh from the shower. But he was there because he couldn't leave, because Luke was in danger. The only reason he was even there in the first place was to protect Luke. He didn't leave us, like I'd feared. He'd gone to keep our kids safe. And he didn't tell the Russians about Marta and Trey either. Peter admitted to that. I murdered him, Viv. I murdered him. And you still don't trust me. I remember the horror on his face when he realized he'd killed Yuri, and not because it was Yuri, but because he'd killed a man. He did something he'll regret for the rest of his life. And he did it for me.
I'm sorry, I whisper. I reach an arm out toward him, and he just looks at it. The gulf between us has never been this wide. The way he's looking at me, the hurt that's there, it's so intense it frightens me. I think I trust him. The reasons not to trust him seem to be evaporating. And I need him on my side right now. It's what's best for Luke. For all of us. My fingers find their way into my pocket, grasp the pendant. I pull it out and extend it toward him, almost like an offering. A way to prove my trust. I took this off Yuri right before Peter arrived. He says nothing, and his expression stays wary. I turn the pendant over, find the four tiny screws on the back. Could you get a screwdriver? He hesitates, then nods, leaves the room, comes back moments later with a toolbox. I pull out the smallest screwdriver. It fits. I loosen all four screws, remove them, then use my fingernail to pry open the edges of the pendant. It comes apart in my hands. Wedged in one side is a mini flash drive. I give it a shake and it falls out into my hand. I hold it up to the light, then look at Matt. I think the names are on here. The names? Yuri's five sleepers. He gives me a blank look. And then it clicks. He doesn't know what I know. I hesitate, but only for a second. Each handler has the names of his five sleepers in his possession. If something happens to him, the replacement's supposed to find the names, contact Moscow for a decryption code, take over. It's how they protect the sleepers' identities. His brow furrows. Why don't they just ask Moscow for the names? The names are not in Moscow. They're only stored locally. He's quiet, and I can almost see the wheels turning. They're not in Moscow? I shake my head. I can see the truth is dawning on him. So when we were told the new handler would get in touch with